Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Good afternoon. I'm Glenn Brooks. Wonderful being with you today. Another day, another moment, along with Lisa LaRose, extraordinaire contributor, producer, dear friend. Lisa's here today. Lisa wrote the introduction of the show today, which I was going to ask you to read. John Adago, modern day. I'm going to call you a modern day mystic. Do you like modern day mystic?
If you like modern day mystic.
I knew you were going to say that. I was just determining if I liked it. Lisa, do I like it?
I think, John, you're multifaceted, and mysticism can, you know, evoke a lot of different things. One of the teachers that I have studied with is actually teaching a course called The Path of the Mystic, which, you know, quite interesting. So it seems to be in consciousness right now, knowing that we're all connected, right?
Yes.
You know, I want to acknowledge my son. I watched my son's show, The Michael Brooks Show, The Michael Brooks Show. If you guys are, you know, curious about politics of the world and how consciousness and policy interact, and also my son is a brilliant comedian. I just want to acknowledge The Michael Brooks Show. So, okay. Why don't you go, Lisa, you wrote a wonderful intro. This intro for the show I like so much that you write. You add such brilliance and usually a beautiful quote that kind of gives people a sense or a sickness to what we're going to explore. Why don't you go ahead and read that? What the heck? Let's read it, and then I want to share a little story and get John's response. So when the story's about these two different states of mind that we live in, that we can access. So one, I sometimes say that we could live in two different songs, the counterfeit song and the genuine song. So the counterfeit song is kind of our ordinary mind, and then there's this other part of our mind. We'll call it the vibrant mind. And I'm going to give you some examples, and I want to have John, who's been really assisting people with practical ways to deal with modern times. You know, in modern times, it's hard to meditate for an hour sometimes. So we're going to talk about, in modern times, how to get this quality of your vibrant mind awake so you can have a different experience, and you can deal with the strains and the obstacles to be able to access this mystical mind. It's mystical mind, because it's kind of mystical but very practical. So, Lisa, if you would, please read the wonderful write-up that you wrote about today's program.
So we don't have a quote of the day, but actually, John,
you always come up with
inspiration.
Yes.
No, but you know what? Today, John was what? The inspiration for this, because he has really brought us forth into this journey, into the exploration, into the remarkable. So, you know, thank you to John. So it was entitled "Vibrant Beginnings and Exploration in the Remarkable." To begin something with a new mind, whether it's a relationship or anything that we approach, we must begin with a vibrant mind. Not a mind that is full of the past or thought viruses, but with a new sense of listening and seeing. Today, we're going to be exploring with John Adago. We're going to be speaking about beginning the day and each moment with a vibrant mind. We'll be discussing how the past and our interpretations of the obstacles in our past keep us from peace, harmony, and the remarkable. When we clear the obstacles, it allows us a new beginning where we can experience the miraculous power of healing and forgiveness so that a remarkable sense of wonder becomes a way of life. So
beautiful. Welcome, John. It's very beautiful, Lisa. Very beautiful. Oh, I want to tell a quick story, John, and get your and Lisa, I want to get your feedback. So I noticed early on, without the language, the beautiful language Lisa just read to us, I noticed that in certain situations, the quality of mind impacted things. And I noticed certain people would bring this quality of mind. Let me give you an example. Very early on, I heard a story about these two teachers that went to this home, this place where the children were supposed to be handicapped. They were supposed to be mentally, you know, held back. They were really disturbed. They used a lot of horrible language back, you know, in the day. They used language that would kind of condemn people from any ability to access health. And so one story was that this guy would go to these institutions, and his comment was, he was a spiritual teacher, he was a teacher, and his comment was, well, they're pretty much doomed for this lifetime, this is their predicament. And so anything they did when he would go to see them, he would say things like, you know, if they throw cigarettes at each other, if they just mindlessly watch TV, like there was no hope, right? So what I want to create a distinction and a contrast for, there was another teacher who did things very differently. When he went, all he could see was this deeper quality of health in them, this health realization. Or you could call it the Buddhist nature. You know, it's different language, but he saw this. And when he came, the congruence of the room, what word am I looking for? There's another word, but they came alive. They picked up things on the floor. They sat up. It was almost like there was a totally different quality in the room. So one of my explorations, and I work with people who want to become speakers and communicate their deepest messages, what is it that brings this quality of vibrancy? Is it something we in fact can cultivate and bring alive? And how does it impact other people? Because the vibrant mind actually, I feel, connects us and is if you will, a mind of oneness, a bigger mind is joined. So what I want to ask you, John, and what your experience over the last 40 years with this is, the contrast between one mind that accepts things as they are, you know, which people would say is pragmatic, and some meditation people would say, well, you need to accept things as they are, which has truth in it. And then the other aspect of the mind that seems to bring something and invoke something on the scene, a sense of wonder, perhaps a sense of healing, perhaps a total reversal. I mean, I had about 40 conversations with a psychiatrist, Bill Pettit, who told me he had so many people wake up to their health in a mental institution with the recognition they actually have health in them. So I want to ask you, have you seen those two, looks like two different worlds, in the sense how we perceive people, how we listen to them, and bringing this vibrant sense of mind, this new beginning of mind. What's your experience with how the vibrant mind impacts others and ourselves in terms of joining, connecting, and invoking a new possibility together? Welcome.
So one of the principles that the master teachers spoke about is that what you give your attention to is what grows and prospers. So if you're focused on people's limitations, that's what tends to be fostered. Whereas if you actually perceive the potential for growth and development and healing, and you give your attention to that, and you speak to that in the patient or in the person that you're meeting with, well, that's what grows. Parents understand that you can walk around all day correcting your children, but that doesn't give a very favorable result. The idea is to catch them doing something right and praise that. The same in the classroom. The same in the institution, the same in a group of people who are striving towards something higher. We don't focus on what they don't understand. We remind them of what they do know and do understand within themselves. And by putting your attention on that, you help them to allow that aspect of themselves to grow and develop.
Lisa. Thank you, John. Lisa, how does that ring to you? Those two, with seemingly two worlds. I'd say my whole life since I was in, you know, I went to school, I was very fascinated about these qualities of mind. I didn't call it that then, but it seems like certain people invoke certain things. And when John said, "What we focus on expands," so we focus on something, on someone, and we take out of the equation they could fail, and we just see them as, you know, having this buoyancy, and we send that to them. We really make it, you know, almost like our inner alchemy to see that and send that to them, if you will, almost like we're making an impact. What's your take on that, Lisa? How do you see the vibrant mind and the ordinary mind? If we're going to play with just two distinctions, or the vibrant mind and the counterfeit mind.
I was really drinking in the words that, and it brought to mind so many people that, you know, I come into their, you know, whether it be in, you know, working at a department store or in a checkout line or whatnot. And you'll see that they may not see the gifts in themselves. And, you know, somebody will greet you with a beautiful smile. It takes a moment to really look into their eyes and acknowledge that, like, wow, you know what, your smile, your vibrancy, you know, really illuminated me, as opposed to somebody who just sort of goes through the mundane, you know, aspects of their job. They're not really happy about being there. You know, but I think that when you can shine and you can share just a little bit of that joy and that vibrancy, it changes things for everybody around you. I mean, you can't help but smile when somebody looks at you with a big, welcoming, vibrant smile. Even if they're just the server at your table, you're serving up to somebody. And you certainly can change that. You know, if somebody you notice is not having a good day and you know, you ask them how they are and they just give you, "Well, I'm fine." You know, fine. And I'm like, "No, really, how are you? You know, you don't seem fine." And then it sometimes catches people off guard that, "Well, you know, I'm asking you because I care, because I'm taking a moment to really listen and be present with you in this time and space that we're sharing." And I think that it's really a gift. And I know, you know, John is very connected with children. I feel the same way. You know, you watch children at play and most often, you know, you'll see them on the playground and they'll be encouraging each other. You know, "We'll try this. Oh, no, you try this." And there's not really a lot of activity. It's finding, you know, "Well, you can do this. Well, let me show you this." And it brings out the gifts. And I think John is so right that when we, you know, what we focus on, bring that out. And so that's my story and I'm sticking to it. How about that?
Yeah, true story. You're listening to Vibrant Living Network. I'm Glenn Brooks. Where it's been my life to explore this quality of vibrancy and the different paths. And certainly John Adago is, you know, John, I was talking to someone yesterday. I know you've written about the work of Rudolf Steiner, and it's been in recent years I've appreciated him even more as sort of one of the most, I don't know, influential people. I guess he was considered a clairvoyant in his day, a clairvoyant scientist, and he contributed to the fields of medicine, anthroposophical medicine, anthroposophical gardening, or biodynamic gardening. So what I see that you've done, you've taken these teachings, you put in books like East Meets West, and what I'm excited about your seminars and your work now is that so many people in modern times, I think the big distinction now is that one is we could study the brain, we couldn't back then. And the things that really change the brain, that's the most, I guess, exciting. I was at a conference last year on the brain, cognition, and movement. And now they're learning that just the way we move changes our brain. So if you want to change your brain, move differently. You know, get up and walk backwards, use your other hand. Like, started to have a different relationship to movement. So I was thinking today, we talked about this Vibrant Live, and people often say to me, and I said this earlier when we were meeting earlier, "Oh, by the way, I wanted to comment on something that happened this morning, that it was a spontaneous moment, John, and I want to acknowledge you in the spontaneous moment." Because very often when I work with people as speakers, I do things out of the ordinary. I give them unexpected things. I call this crazy wisdom moment sometimes because they're kind of crazy. I don't have a logical reason. I did it to you this morning. I wanted to say that. Do you recall what I did to you this morning, what I said to you? I don't mean to put you on the spot. Okay. It's okay. You're not on the witness stand or anything. At least he's not a judge, so it's cool. No, what happened this morning was we were talking about your bio and your work, and I threw something totally random at you. I threw random at you is – okay, good. Thank you. So I threw random at you is I said, hey, they say at Larry's Bar you're one of the funniest customers at the bar. And I love how you paused. You paused like – you paused in this way that I felt your innocence and curiosity came to the surface. And I thought that was – I said to Lisa, I said, well, that was a significant thing. You didn't get like thrown off or angry or – it kind of reminds – I thought of a story, John. Deepak Chopra was – Deepak Chopra, I was very close to Deepak in the early days, and he's lecturing. And this woman stands up in the back of the room. Kind of – it reminded me a little of our sequence today a little bit. By the way, I want to acknowledge what struck me about you in that moment was you were awake to that moment, and you inquired. You were like, how is that relevant? Well, you asked the question, but what touched me is you asked in the spirit of a child. Like you didn't get annoyed. And I guess what I notice with people is those moments are the most significant. They're the most significant moments for speakers. Deepak's on the stage, and this woman stands up in the back of the room. She goes, you raped me. He said it to Deepak. And like all these people are staring at her and Deepak. And Deepak's response to her saying this, after she said he raped her, he said, when? And she goes, in 1858, in front of the statue. And everybody laughed. And it broke this moment. What I love is actually how he handled it. It was kind of like he was in the moment. He was in his vibrant mind. And he asked her, okay, say more. That say more moment to me is that the difference between being in this counterfeit place, mechanical, and being awake, inquiring. And so I wanted to say that was a pretty wonderful moment, even though I know it was sort of out of the blue. But I thought, you know, I love how John responded to this. Lisa, remember what John said? Well, John said something like, he had a great comment, actually. He said something, well, how does that move my mission forward or something? And I thought that was a good comment. That was a very good comment. So as you're listening to this program, you got this vibrant mind. I want you to tune in with your vibrant mind and share and stay with us, share with us right here on the Vibrant Living Network. With John Adago, East Meets West, Lisa LaRose, health extraordinaire teacher. Stay with us. I'm Glenn Brooks.
The Real Conscious Connection, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. So I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network. Talk about the vibrant mind, the new beginnings through the vibrant mind. John Adago, I would say John's a teacher. I call him a modern mystic in the sense he's taken these teachings. He's translated them into books. Now he's teaching seminars, including East Meets West. John, what's your website?
It's thejourneyback.net. Thejourneyback.net.
Lisa LaRose. So in modern times, people feel less and less able to function in time. They feel totally pressed. So the most recent book I read on this is called The Village Effect, and it's basically saying that texting and emails do not reach the emotional brain. So there's a depletion, there's a sense of more separateness. Even if we get 10,000 emails, we're still not reaching this part of the brain. So as a long-term practitioner and someone that wants, you want to bring this to modern people. So your weekends, one of the things you, I know you want to be able to do is help people deal with things. So if they miss a long meditation or if they missed a period of relaxation or they didn't get to their yoga class, in modern times, how do you see that people could take on, you know, I think in 1957, Joel Goldsmith, I think one of the greatest Christian mystics of all time, I think he was an amazing contributor. He said that already then we were losing silence. He made a comment about how things were actually noisier than ever. What's your comment about modern times and the speed of life and being able to find that place of awareness that we could respond and speak from, even when things seem so hurried? And people's mantra today is busy, busy, busy. What's the antidote, or what's the doorway in if you missed your meditation? If someone's listening to the program right now with you, John and Lisa, what would you share with people who feel the sense of time illness, which 99% of people I speak to do?
Well, people are driven by desires. They arise almost continually. And they're often conflicting and pull us in different directions, often opposite directions. The problem with the world today is it actually nurtures and creates even more desires. We're constantly assaulted by the media to create more and more desires for us to satisfy. But even without that, we provide more than enough arising from our own mind and feelings. This does not lead to fulfillment or happiness. Most of us at the end of the day find that there were so many events, so many impressions barely recognized, that they're almost all a blur. There are a few moments during the day that actually resonate with us, touch us in a deeper part of ourselves. Those moments become a part of our being. We're all familiar with a heightened state of awareness. We might experience it in a moment that's an emergency or a very dramatic moment, like the birth of a child, or even standing in front of a scene of nature that inspires something. In these moments, we're fully connected. The mind, the heart, the body, the spirit are all there. They're open. And the impressions that come in through the light and sound register in a very deep place within ourselves. Actually, those impressions are digested. The question is, how do we increase the frequency and duration of these moments of heightened awareness? And this is what the mystics taught. The mystics taught that it was possible to let go of the superficial and connect with something deeper and essential within ourselves, moment by moment. The reason for the spiritual practices, whether it's a meditation or a contemplation or a period of study or a period of worship, those moments allow us to accumulate a subtle energy, a grace, as it were. In the Vedanta, they call it sattva. This subtle energy accumulates within us, and then when we get up from the meditation, that energy allows us to have moments of wakefulness during the day. In a previous program, we spoke about the analogy of the firefly that illuminates itself and the area around it. And the question is, well, was that a voluntary act, or is that something that just happened? And the answer is, it's both. It can't happen if the energy isn't there to create the light. We cannot wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to be in a more wakeful, alert state throughout my day. It just doesn't work. But what we can do is wake up with a resolve to change the conditions subtly in our life that allows the energy available for us to be more awake and alert during the day. This is what meditation, spiritual practice, and prayer, and contemplation, and good company, and a measured life are all about. They're about holding the vessel of ourself in such a way that we're not just spilling out energy in loss of temper, in excesses of every kind. Above the temple of Delphi, the first phrase is know thyself, but the second phrase is take nothing in excess. So the wise man knows he's not being asked to deny himself anything. He's just being asked, if he wishes to move in a conscious direction, to take carefully, hold firmly, but let go easily. And do not allow oneself to be overwhelmed or taken away from oneself by anything.
You know, the Dalai Lama said something that I think is kind of relevant, that I just I want to get Lisa's comment on this. So Dalai Lama said fairly recently that no matter what's been taught in the past, we need to look at the most recent science, right? So you were talking about environments and you were talking about the influence of these, you know, teachers. So I just had a meeting, as I was telling Lisa, with the psychiatrist. Because we all know, or we've heard, that there's a relationship between breathing and our whole system. We know when we're inspired, consciousness comes through us in a way that it takes us past our personal thinking. We have a sense that we're in a good mood. The world seems different, right? So because I work with people who want to inspire and speak to others, I'm very interested in what regulates our adrenaline. And what's all inspires us. And the third thing that I'm very interested in is how people develop anxieties and phobias and how to free ourselves. Well, I met the psychiatrist yesterday, John and Lisa, and I told Lisa about this, that he actually studied environments that people had panic attacks in. Supermarkets, trains, planes, highways, boats. And what he was curious about, and I thought this was such an interesting investigation, he had the feeling that those environments, those closed environments, had less oxygen and more CO2. And so when he investigated elevators, for instance, he thought it would be 3%. It was almost like 80%. So he developed something, this breath regulator, it's called BeCalm, that when he told me when this woman came to see him, she was having a massive panic attack. So panic attacks are very common in modern times. Like, you know, way past whatever they were back then, people, because we strain ourselves, it puts strain on our adrenals and our kidneys, and we have a lot more adrenaline. So, but he was saying this woman had a full-blown panic attack. She used a breath regulator, and in 8 breaths, she was a different person. She came out of the panic attack. Because CO2, I guess, has a toxic effect on a certain percentage of the population. To me, that's a current-day wisdom. That it's not on all, and as an example, it's not on all people's heads. In fact, there's a biology to what impacts us. That's why people might say they feel better with the ocean, as an example. The oxygen equation is different. It's in the same way, I'm sure, certain ashrams or places, the vibe is different, the energy is different. I'm curious, in modern times, is there things that you feel like, as an example, I know some people have a bell. Some people, as an example, have a little bit of a water, something where the water's streaming. Is there anything you found for people listening that would help them regulate and feel the sense of flow that would help them? Right now, a lot of people are doing meditation. We talked about this morning. Tons of people are meditating, but a lot of people say the meditation isn't satisfying or they don't feel this ground of peace. Is there any suggestions you have that you think that as a modern day teacher, of helping people to find this quality of mind, this vibrant mind, that any suggestions you want to make to people around their practices when people speak to you, are there any mistakes or things that you feel would give people more access to their vibrant mind? An example, the CO2 factor, I find absolutely fascinating, by the way. I'm going to give you guys. I'm going to give you guys a test at the end of the show. How to tell if CO2 is impacting you too. A little test you could do at home. Okay.
But the regulation of the breath to change the quality of thought processes. That's been something that's been known for millenniums. So the mystics controlled breath for the purpose of controlling mind and controlling metabolism. As a practical matter today, in the midst of our lives of incessant and continual activity and demands on ourselves, we need to take time for ourselves every day. When we leave the house and we set out on our day's activities, we need to have a resolve that regularly, three or four times a morning, three or four times an afternoon, we stop. Let the attention come out of ourselves, out of our incessant thoughts and feelings. Open up to what's around us. See, smell, hear, connect. Connect with yourself. Be aware that I am this vibrant, living being, right now, in the moment. And you take a few breaths, deep breaths, long breaths, and then you continue with your activities. Now, all of this will only take a minute or two. That minute or two, five or six times a day, can transform the quality of the day. And yet people's initial response to this kind of suggestion is, well, I really can't spare that kind of time.
That's right.
And yet a moment's reflection indicates that we waste 10 times more time than that every day doing nonsense. There are many moments during the day when there's an opportunity for this pause, waiting for an elevator, before we get on a bus, after we hang up the phone and before we make the next phone call, before we turn on the computer in the morning, when we leave a cab or a bus or a train. These are moments that we have to ourselves. We could take advantage of these moments to open up, expand the awareness, come out of ourselves. But we don't. Mechanically and habitually, the mind churns, the body churns. We're thinking about what we just did or what we're about to do or worried about something that might or might not ever occur. It's beginning to undo this pattern of meaningless interior activity and replace it with awareness and a deepened sense of who and what I am.
Wonderful. Lisa?
Yeah, I was going to ask, John, so if I was a firefly rather than just a fly in your room and you were waking up in the morning, what would that look like? What are some of your practices that you could share with the audience about, you know, really how to start that energy moving from the moment you awaken in the morning?
Yeah, this is a really good question. It's a question of a lifetime. What becomes apparent with just a minimum amount of observation of oneself is that when we wake up in the morning, we generally don't wake up. And how many mornings do I find myself in the shower and there's this steam and shampoo and mist and stuff, and my head is in an equally troubled cloud or muddled cloud. And then I go, wait a minute. And you come out of that. And there's an alertness, there's an awareness. And then there are a few seconds or a few moments where the quality of my being changes while I go through my morning ritual. And that I come out and I meet my mate or I meet someone else or I get a phone call. How often do we actually meet that person being fully present? Mm-hmm. But we're all capable of deepening this sense of connection. When we eat our food, we can taste our food. When we're listening to someone speak, we're actually listening to them speak. There's a great story about two people that meet who are students of two different teachers. And one of them says, my teacher is capable of many phenomenal feats. He's been seen levitating. He appears to people in the distance. He reads minds. Well, can your teacher do anything extraordinary? And the second student says, oh, yes. When he walks, he walks. When he eats, he eats. When he listens, he listens. When he speaks, he hears the sound of his own voice. In fact, these moments in our day are extraordinary, or the exception. However, we're all capable of those moments. And these are the practices that we need to begin to cultivate in our daily life. To remember a very simple principle, we speak for the benefit of the person or people we're speaking to. Most often that's forgotten. We're speaking because we enjoy the sound of our own voice. We like the reaction. We like being the center of attention. We like the positive feedback that we're getting. But none of that does the listener much good. So when I actually connect with a person, look and listen and sense him, and just get an idea of what that person seems to need or is feeling in the moment, and then address that, that's a completely different level of communication. Mm-hmm. We're all capable of this kind of refinement and improvement, but the key is it takes work. It takes effort. It takes a willingness to put our own personal desires and fears of the moment aside and see what's needed by the situation and by the people in front of us and around us. And this is a habit that can be cultivated. It's really nothing extraordinary. It's simply taking care of our responsibilities and the people around us. And this liberates us from this constant mechanical compulsion to chase and fulfill one desire after another, all day long. And at the end of that day, we kind of drop into bed exhausted because we've been tugged and pulled through the day. Mm-hmm. So one of the practices, you stop whenever you find yourself in this state where you feel like you're being pulled along, as I said previously, by a big dog on a leash, right? And you stop and you go, where am I going? What's this hurry? And for a moment you think about, well, what's pushing or pulling me at the moment? And that kind of a moment of reflection, just a moment, just a few seconds, you go, oh, I'm worried about being late, or I'm want to be there.
Oh, well, we're going to take a brief, John, we're going to take a brief pause, a very brief pause, to become awake right now. Here in the Vibrant Living Network, I'm Glenn Brooks. Stay with us. More with Lisa LaRose, John Adago, East Meets West, and you waking up as our lunchtime exploration continues here on the Vibrant Living Network. I'm
Feed your soul with waves of consciousness on OM Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network. I'm Glenn Brooks. I wanted to share with you a story. As John's speaking, Lisa, I can see it pulls me, it inspires me to go beyond the content to the context. So the content is kind of like the cloud, and the context like the sky. When I was about 10 years old, my mother took me to see Judy Garland. She was a big-time Judy Garland fan, loved Judy Garland. And she took me to that performance. I was around 10. And we sat in the back row. And I was like on the outer end. I was sitting next to my mother, and I was like right there in the exit area. So when Judy Garland took an intermission, she waved to the crowd. Everybody was on their feet, clapping and applauding, and she was back. She had this very silvery outfit on. It was very striking. She was probably less than 100 pounds. But people were just treating her as if the whole world changed, just hearing her sing. Now, as she's backing up, just about to exit, she sticks her hand out and she grabs my hand and she says, come with me. So next thing I know, I'm sitting in a dressing room. Now, I said about content and context. Well, the content, I was with Judy Garland, but the context is all these things were happening around me so quickly. She was yelling. She says, I need my pills. I need my pills. And I remember Phil Loft, her husband at the time, brought her these pills. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, she really needs these pills. And next thing I know, she's going to sign me an autograph. She's looking in the mirror. She takes the pills. And then she scribbles the autograph. And she sticks out her hand again. And next thing you know, we're back. All of a sudden, we're going through the hallway, entering the arena again with the screaming people and standing there clapping. And she enters and she brings it back to my mother. And I remember what struck me was the pills. She passed away of a drug overdose. And I guess there's moments, either I would call these contextual moments, where we see something that's beyond the content. So as an example, we label our problems in life, their money, love, sex, whatever we label, that's the content. But the thing is, what's the context? What's the bigness that's really informing us, that's really moving us, that's causing us to take certain actions, you know? Like, how do we begin to have a little more mastery around the context of life, the things that are happening? Do you have a story like, Lisa, do you have a story that when you experienced that story, it altered the way that you saw things or it impacted you on a real deep personal level? Like, something happened when you were a kid or teenager, and that moment isn't just information or memory. It's just it moves you to see differently, to move differently. Is there something that happened, like a timeless moment?
You know what? It's going to sound – I had a great aunt that was dying of cancer, and she had a brain tumor. And I remember being 6 years old, and everybody – my grandmother had a very large family, and all of the family members were coming to see my Aunt Anna. She chose to be at home, but she was still real conscious. And I can still see the day and just sitting there holding her hand. And I don't really remember anything else that was going on around. It was just that moment of holding her hand, and I can still feel her hand, and I don't even know that any words were exchanged. I didn't, she wasn't ready to pass away or anything, but I remember, as being six and sitting in her living room and her laying on the couch and not really comprehending everything that went on, but I can I can still feel her hand in mine. And I think that was pretty transformational.
In Lisa's story, John, and my story, it seems like Lisa, it's so beautiful. This does remind me of you're an author of a child's book. The children's books, what I love about them is in Lisa's awareness, she's a child, but she's also has this consciousness that's beyond her linear age. It's like she has this beautiful awareness of her aunt, the room, sort of this precious moment that somehow we have this wild idea that we should get a lot of schooling and fill our heads so much so that we kind of forget about the relevance of the wondrous present. So what would you say to people, they're listening right now and they have a problem, something's really grabbing their attention. It could be a banking matter, it could be someone sick. So what Lisa did in that moment, what touched my soul was that she's there, and I realized it's so beautiful when we're there with each other. It's almost like someone told me the other day, by the way, the whole theme of John Denver's life. I was a big John Denver appreciator. I met John Denver at a concert, and they told me the theme of his whole life is all the songs. I want you guys to think about this. It's so great to be home. There is nothing like home. It's the best thing on the universe. It's all the songs, right? Home is where it's at. The other aspect of John was I need to leave home, right? I need to leave home. I got to get away from home. So Lisa's awareness and my awareness was really going, of course, it changed my relationship with pills and medication. I was like, wow, I had to question that on some level. So beyond our meditation, how do we bring this beautiful moment-to-moment context where we're paying attention and not fixated on stuff that in some sense, it might matter at some it function mechanical level, but the sort of awareness that Lisa has is sort of this beautiful glowing moment. How do we bring that, John, in simple moments?
Yes. Well, we were speaking about those moments of awareness and full participation and presence in the first half of the show. And she described a perfect one. She was fully and completely there. What happened in that moment will be with her for the rest of her life, because it's a conscious moment, and conscious moments are in eternity. So the question is, how do we increase the frequency and duration of these conscious moments? Can we increase, or is it just something that happens? And the answer is yes, we definitely can. In the case that Lisa described and others that we will remember, like the birth of my first child or my wedding day or other moments where I was – something happened that will never leave my memory. Now, those just happened. But what the mystics taught and what we can learn is how to live our lives so that this alertness and awareness is there, that when we meet an event, we meet it fully. These are what are called the spiritual practices. This is why people meditate and contemplate and study. This is why they seek out the company of other people who value the same love of wisdom and truth. They seek it out because they're seeking to heighten the moments of awareness in their lives. And it's something we're all capable of. It's something that that a teacher teaches, that a student learns. But then he has to apply those practices in his life. We spoke about stopping, pausing, coming to oneself from time to time during the day. Many people heard that conversation. How many people will actually put it into practice today, tomorrow, the next day? It depends on them. What the master teachers taught was that they can't help people. All they can do is provide wisdom and favorable conditions that people who seek a deeper understanding and a more profound level of existence make the efforts to help themselves.
By the way, I want to thank Melissa for telling me that the part of the John Denver story, by the way, what I didn't communicate about the John Denver story was that story of it's great to be home, I need to leave home. In the gap are addictions, there are things that pull us away, and that it's unexplainable. You know, like why people they get addicted to alcohol. The addictions are the thing that sort of disrupts that. Jacob Lieberman, eye doctor, he said we have three major addictions. Well, the first addiction, he says, we have, John and Lisa, is our addiction to thinking. The second, he says, to our eyeglasses. sometimes pass over, addicted to our eyeglasses because that reinforces the way we think and the way we see. So actually getting rid of our glasses challenges our whole universe. And, of course, I call that vibrant seeing, which I'm a student of, and I'm putting this course together. But, oh, the other thing I want to leave with people, because I know some people are going to say, Glenn never came around and told us. So, okay, so I acknowledge that. So it was John Denver, who I appreciate it. I think he drank a lot. I think at a certain point, he drank. And I think this mystifies people because you see someone like that. He seems to have this amazing life. We can't figure it out. We cannot figure it out based on how we're taught to figure things out. It doesn't make sense. So the CO2 factor, how do you figure out if, in fact, you're CO2 sensitive? Because I was saying why people have panic attacks in these places, elevators, supermarkets, cruise ships, traffic, that the CO2 is different. And this psychiatrist just developed this device. Okay, here's the test. You ready? You take two Alka-Seltzer Gold, and you put them in an inch of water in a glass, And then you add, after it sizzles, you're supposed to put a straw in the glass a little above the water and just breathe. And he was saying people that are sensitive to CO2, he's going to come on the show, by the way. We're going to get into this whole thing with breathing because it's huge. And breathing changes the whole quality of our lives. Once we learn how to trust our breath and we have co-breathing together, everything changes our lives forever. So it takes 3 seconds to totally change our physiology. It changes. We could go into emergency state in seconds. So these little pauses change our neurology. They change – the problem with the news, the challenge of the news, it talks about the outer edge of the news. Like it talks about what happened in New Zealand, but it doesn't talk about how people function. It talks about the outer edge of something that creates emergencies and disasters. But why – if people learn to function differently and breathe differently, it eradicates – it gets to the cause. That's what this inner teaching is exploring as we – and the more we participate in it, it shifts us. So that's one of the ways you check for CO2 is that test. And we'll be doing more programs kind of on relational breathing, on breathing impacts us as a way of life.
Yes,
Lisa, based on what John...
Matter, anybody
yes.
can stop and take 3 deep breaths at any time during the day. Just stop, take 3 deep, full breaths. And if you like it, take a few more. And it changes your relation to what's going around you and your relation to the different parts of yourself. There's just a deeper sense of being that arises from that. So this is a practical matter. And this change...
Go ahead, Lisa.
I just encourage everybody to go to John Adago's website, thejourneyback.net. He's going to be bringing these teachings to seminars and workshops, and his wonderful books are available. You can find them there. So I apologize, John. I just wanted to mention that for anybody that was listening. So please finish up.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. The books are Ancient Wisdom Can Enrich Your Life Today and East Meets West. They're both available on Amazon. So I lost my train of thought there for a moment. Yes.
Your train of thought is actually –
about taking a deep breath.
You can take a deep breath because Glenn's speaking about this change of the balance between oxygen and CO2. And this is – I mean, the mystics and the yoga teachers have known this for millenniums. You can – when the breath is shallow, we tend to be in a superficial aspect of ourselves in a rather formatory operation of the mind, just a lot of fleeting – quick thoughts and feelings. As we deepen our breath, come to ourselves, take a moment to disconnect from the pursuit of our desires and just be liberated from that for a minute. If you can do that for a full minute to 3 minutes during the day, it changes the quality of the life. You will meet different events. You will meet events differently. You will respond to people with more depth. There will be less compulsion and more appropriate action. And these are things that we all want. We all seek to deepen our relationships to our loved ones and to our professional associates. We all seek to be men and women of substance who are of use to ourselves and to the people around us. And we're all painfully aware that there's a tremendous need for men and women to play this role. It takes but a little bit of observation to realize that conditions are rather perilous all around us, that the speed of the degeneration of our institutions and political system and moral values is on a rapid descent. When those conditions exist, to preserve a balance in the creation, knowledge and wisdom is available for some people to provide a check against that descending cycle. The creation needs more men and women that are pulling from the creator's end of the rope. The creation needs to be uplifted, and we can learn how to play that role.
One comment or question about the Beth that I want to share. I've been teaching and working with people's breath as it relates to, I guess the question is, and the guys, I want you to explore this. I want you to, John suggested inhaling. I want you guys to also notice what happens when you exhale three times. So we can watch that next week, but the breath is this doorway to the infinite that you have in your body that's so profound. John, thank you so much. Lisa, such a gift. I appreciate you both very much. Stay with us for next time. And I want to tell you, acknowledge you guys that I have such a good relationship with Om Times. We are the Vibrant Living Network. Thank you for listening to us today. I'm Glenn Brooks. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.